What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special. It is Friday afternoon. We're supposed to be starting the weekend, but we're not because we just watched history. The biggest single day sell-off in the history of the silver market just hit today. The biggest intraday sell-off, I should say. We have got Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vaults is here today to help us make heads or tails of whatever that was that just happened in the silver market. But before we even get into why it happened, let's just paint a picture here of some of these numbers, all right? Yesterday, at its high, silver hit $121.64. Today, at its low, we hit $74.40. A two-day swing of $47.24. I mean, guys, we just cracked $47 silver a couple of weeks ago, and now we're looking at that kind of a price swing across one day. Currently, silver's at about $84, down $41 on the day. We've got gold not faring much better, down 9% today. We hit 5,600 briefly yesterday. This morning, we hit a low of 4,680, over $900 swing in 2 days for gold, currently sitting around 4,900. That's just the last time I checked. That was a few seconds ago, so who knows what the price is now. Platinum not faring much better, off 18%. That was the worst day of metals trading I have ever seen. The worst day in silver trading ever, even worse than the Hunt Brothers sell-off. And Bob is here to help us out. Now, real quick, Bob, I want to finish off your introduction, and then I'm just going to let you go on this. This is Bob's Twitter feed, at Profits Plus ID on X or Twitter. I got a link down below in the notes to this. If you are trading, investing, or at all interested in precious metals, this is without a doubt the single best feed on X that you should be following. Whenever I see something happen in metals and I'm not sure what's up, the first place I go is Bob's Twitter feed. And if I don't see it there, I text Bob. So that's pretty much how this goes. Also, Bob is the CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults, and I've got that website down below as well. Highly recommend you check that out. Bob has been working in the precious metals industry for probably as long as I've been alive. Bob, help us out. What happened today?
Yeah, the funny thing is, after everything you just said, silver and gold are still up on the month. I mean,
it's been a good month.
It's still up about 17% on the month, I think it is, or start of the year, I think $72 an ounce. I mean, you're right. It's absolutely insane. The movement, the hype, the rhetoric, the leverage, like we were talking, the Chinese markets, with regard to the amount of premium that was showing above the London markets, the future. Talked about that article that I put out that just showed the influx of money that was just coming into the sector was just unreal. And this is, everyone has to remember, this is a small sector with regard to the overall landscape of the financial markets. And so you were just basically feeding, ocean through a garden hose. And now you just saw the reversal of that, where basically a lot of people that were latecomers went on leverage, margin, played, mining stocks, whatever it may be, but, maybe went a little too heavy. Stops were just getting just continually flushed out. Longs were coming in, maybe buying the dip. The dip just kept coming, and then they would get stopped out. So you'd have, a constant. Today was like almost a stop run just being hit constantly. And then you probably had algorithmic funds and other types of short players maybe starting to game the downside and trying to press the market lower. It really looked like a lot of forced liquidation was kind of happening almost literally this morning. It was just nonstop.
Now, let me ask you something, because I went looking to see what the mainstream is talking about in the press. And I'm kind of dumbfounded by this. And I still don't believe they're even trying to pass this off. They're trying to make it sound like the nomination of Kevin Warsh to head the Federal Reserve is what triggered this sell-off. And, maybe that was the butterfly flapping its wings. But a $500 drop in gold Kevin Warsh might be more hawkish than the BlackRock guy they were floating last week, but he's no hawk. He's no Volcker. You live in this industry, right? I mean, you do all these things in the precious metals. You store them, you trade them. Did you hear anything on the phone today? Did anybody call you, any of your colleagues or the dealers you talked to? Did anybody even mention Kevin Warsh at all today during this sell-off?
Not too much. It's funny because I had a chance to meet Kevin, oddly enough, at a precious metals conference in New York several years ago. It was put on by the CME. Very bright guy. I mean, very, very bright guy. So he's highly regarded on Wall Street. I think he comes from the Stanley Druckenmiller. He's worked very closely with Stanley Druckenmiller. So, I think Jamie Dimon actually had high regards for him as well, or high regards for the pick. So that says a lot to his acumen within Wall Street. But you're right. At the end of the day, if you get a downside move started in the general markets, any Fed chair is going to come in and liquefy and try to stimulate or try to basically print money. Because at the end of the day, their job is to try to support the treasury market. And, if you start having collateralized issues where collateral is starting to drop in value, the Fed has to come into the rescue, so to speak. And so you're right. He's basically, I think, a name maybe people were expecting maybe more of a dovish or sort of a one that would be more in line with Trump's plans of maybe leveraging up and trying to talk the dollar down. But at the end of the day, the silver market, the gold market was obviously red hot. A lot of money was coming into the sector. You don't want to see it just go completely vertical and go parabolic because it was just wiping out the industry, to be honest with you. And I don't know if you want to touch on that, but we could talk about the effects of what this move was happening, the last week or so, the last couple of weeks, just in the physical metals retail and wholesale industry.
I definitely want to talk about what's going on in the industry because there's a lot happening that I see and a lot I suspect that I really don't like that's happening in the industry. But before we get into the mechanics of the industry and some of the less ethical things that I see going on, I want to focus on, you mentioned margin, and you posted earlier this week about a margin increase at the CME, and you also posted a pretty interesting article about just how wacky they're getting with the leverage over in China, and we can elaborate on China in a minute, but we saw it. An interesting thing happened last week in the Japanese bond market, where the Japanese bond market had one of its worst days in history, big spike in interest rates. And that was really what kickstarted the monster move in gold over these last 2 weeks. Gold was kind of lagging silver. And then the Japan bond market happened. And the interesting thing about this meltdown in the Japanese bond market that saw tens of billions of dollars of value evaporate is, according to Bloomberg, a day later, it was only about 240, I think, or maybe it was $280 million of actual selling that triggered $50 billion of losses in bonds. And it's kind of indicative of over-levered, illiquid markets where, yeah, we saw this monster slam today, but was it really that much selling that triggered this? Or was this industry and this market just so far out in front of its skis that anything would have started this?
Yeah, I mean, I did hear that there was, I think on the London Fix, which came in our morning, maybe it was London Afternoon Fix, that saw a big seller in the market. And that probably started the cascade the markets pick up on different things. They look at different activities in different regions and try to understand, okay, how's it gonna affect as the day is sort of going around the globe. But when the selling kind of started overnight, and then it kind of, we had this big drop, I think, really early in the morning, then they had this bounce back up. I think silver bounced to like 103. And then it just started to kind of fall apart. The selling just wouldn't let up. Meaning it almost was as if maybe someone that was leveraged in the precious metals world or a fund was leveraged, or the problem we live in this era of financial markets is the ETFs have such a very dominating effect on price. And if you look at, you know, inverse ETFs and so forth, money starts piling in to whatever side the market's moving to, that has a magnetic or magnified effect on that move. So, you know, people may have been starting to hedge or selling, trying to, you know, protect maybe their long side exposure, whatever it may be, or just going into these inverse ETFs, which basically feed the futures markets. So everyone starts buying these inverse ETFs, those inverse ETFs start shorting the markets, and you just have this sort of cascading effect where everything just starts falling apart. It's interesting because, you know, again, what you mentioned earlier with the bond market, you know, these types of markets will start to interact with each other. Because if one position or one large position starts having a fault in price and collateral starts going down, people start selling whatever they can start selling. And this is where we have to be very careful just in the general markets that this doesn't lead to some type of contagion.
Interesting. Contagion from the precious metal market, you mean spilling over into other markets? Is that what you're worried about?
Yeah. A lot of I've seen this, you know, been in the business for, you know, over 30 years, 33 years or so. And sometimes the precious metals, which are extremely liquidity sensitive, may be sniffing out potentially what could be coming down the road for the general market. And that's something to just be keen on. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. This could have been just a one-off event in the precious metals world. Where a lot of fast money came in, a lot of fast money's coming out. But it's just something, again, you're trying to watch as many things as you can. You're watching the tea leaves. You're trying to soak in sort of the breadcrumbs and try to create sort of the scenarios that could come out from a lot of this volatility. People have to remember the GBZ, which is the gold volatility index, just enormous. I mean, it was over 40. You had the VXSLV, which is the volatility index on SLV options, was over 120. I mean, these are huge, huge numbers. And so when you see that, it's great when things are going up. But, you know, again, trying to, when you get into this sort of parabolic type of move, you never know where this thing could lead. I mean, it could go much higher, but you know, you could also have very sharp corrections. And today was just one of those days where, you know, the long side, you know, 2 weeks ago it was the short side getting a religious experience, and today was the long side getting that same experience.
Yeah, I got some pretty rough phone calls today. You know, so I had one guy I spoke to saw more than $1 million worth of gains evaporate in his brokerage account and various ETFs and mining stocks that he was holding. I mean, the guy's still in the green on his trades, but he went to bed rich and he woke up, well, a lot less rich. You also mentioned reading the tea leaves. I mean, we're looking at the silver chart here on screen. We've got hourly candles up here. At least for the last 3 or 4 hours, it's been somewhat quiet after hitting that low. I mean, is this still a falling knife here? Is it too early to even look at this chart and figure out where it's going to go, or what are you looking out for?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you get this kind of move, you want to see some stabilization. I think from maybe your viewer standpoint, you know, a lot of buying kind of stopped the last couple of weeks as, you know, we're hitting 108, 110, 115. You know, the buying slowed down, I should say, and the selling picked up. Today, from what I hear, the buying was just coming right back into the market. People were stepping right in saying, okay, I'm going to take advantage of this break. I don't see anything different that's happened between, you know, yesterday, last week, beginning of the month. Everything still looks like it's the same thing. You know, there's no way out of this debt mess. You know, they can try to put different types of sort of perceptions, you know, by having Kevin Warsh maybe being, he still has to be enacted or voted in as the Fed governor by the Senate Banking Committee and then the Senate. So he still has to get through that. But, you know, anything is possible in this world. I mean, we're living in, you know, a world where political leaders will make comments and then all of a sudden the world changes or the dynamics of the markets change overnight. So that still is something to kind of be careful of. Obviously, oil prices were starting to rise. The commodity sector was starting to kind of come alive the last couple of weeks. That's not something I think the players to be or Wall Street wants to see, because it does definitely can hurt the narrative, the rate cut narrative. And maybe that's why President Trump may have turned a little bit inward to look at maybe Kevin Warsh as maybe being a little bit more friendlier to trying to keep inflation low, or that perception, rather than having another individual that was maybe more pro money printing. And so as well, prices were starting to rocket. I think the oil market is really the key to this whole market. If oil takes off like it did in 2006, 2007, it kills the rate cut narrative. And then ultimately, I think that becomes a massive tax on the economy. That's so far what's been a very big positive for the general market and for the economy. It was luckily we've had low oil prices. But this is part of the problem when you're printing money around the world. China's increasing its liquidity. The Chinese market sort of dominates the gold market, and it'll be interesting to see if Sunday night, they come back in and start buying again. I mean, that's, it seems like China's move is to try to use gold as sort of its devaluation of its currency, against gold rather than against the US dollar.
So you put a lot of stock in oil there. As we speak, we've got an aircraft carrier parked off of Iran. There's been a lot of military assets shuffling around in the region. Everybody knows wars start on Friday night after the market closes, right? They're nice enough to schedule that when markets aren't open. So let's say things do pop off in the Middle East again. What does that mean for precious metals?
I mean, you could make the case that, this thing could have been managed to the downside if something does flare up, that, if you get some kind of perk up in the metals over the weekend or Sunday night, for example, due to some type of event, that, it's rising from a much lower level than it would have risen from if it was just another day in paradise, so to speak. So, who knows? I mean, those, not to put on the tinfoil hat, but that's, you've got that one on for me. So,
All
who knows?
right. And the other thing you mentioned in your prior answer was China. And you posted a pretty interesting article the other day about China. And I read some of it in my live stream this morning. The Shanghai futures price has been trading at a pretty substantial premium over Western prices, we'll say London and New York. Over and above the VAT tax debate, there's debate going on online whether the Shanghai premium is due to the VAT tax or not. But the premium is bigger than the VAT tax, so I think it's almost irrelevant at this point. And then in that article that you posted, they also mention that the one approved silver ETF in China is currently trading at a 36% premium, or at least as of Wednesday it was, trading at a 36% premium to the Shanghai silver price, which itself is trading at a substantial premium to the Western price. So the Chinese have just gone bonkers with what they're paying for metals here. They have no idea what they're buying. And yet I hear this story, and of course, all these silly AI personas on YouTube, which I may have more to say about that in the days ahead, and then maybe not. All of that has been like this whole like China's taking all the silver, they're seizing all the silver, they're waging war on the US, and a lot of narrative that has many people screaming that that might actually be a psyop for some reason. Is there any evidence anywhere? Have you seen any documentation or any reports or anything that suggest metal is actually leaving the West and going to China? Like when it moves between London and New York, we can see it, right? But when it goes to China, have you seen anything to say that's happening?
I haven't seen any numbers yet, for 2026 yet. I mean, we obviously, we just started the months or just started the year. So, those reports will probably start dripping out in the next couple of weeks or so, on the government data and customs side. I believe Switzerland saw a lot of exporting of metal. A lot of it, I didn't get to see the whole report this morning. It's just been really, really busy. So I don't know if you read that, but no, I'm waiting for just official numbers. I try to remove all the speculation. The LBMA is going to crash, the COMEX is going to crash, and The LBMA London has no metal left. I mean, I keep hearing it from these Substack guys and the industry, the promoters. It's very disingenuous, I think. It's one thing to voice your opinion. I totally have, everyone has a right to do it. That's fine. But to lead sort of a subscriber base or lead or being used as a ploy for a dealer to say, listen, this guy's saying this, so therefore it must be right. The industry needs, I think, a bigger leash on its practices of sort of hype and fear mongering and trying to dispel, truth and more of a fairer, I guess, narrative, when it comes to all these numbers and industry practices and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I try to operate from the premise of like, just don't be a dirtbag, but I realize that doesn't really translate and people don't operate that way. And look, I have no problem with people making money, but I really do see, pardon my French, there is some outright dirtbag shit happening in the precious metals industry right now. And well, maybe I should just stop there. I will have more to say about this in the future, but it is particularly heinous what I see them doing. And before we get into some of that, let me just go through, because I see these guys piling up here. Nacho Man says he's first in the super chats. Thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that, sir. Here's to you. We have a slightly stronger coffee blend than normal today. I think after the day we've had, we could all use it. Bob, by the way, I was expecting you to show up with like two black eyes and a bloody lip. So you look great considering the day we all had. Let me just say that.
Yeah, the hairline, I think, just went back an inch.
Yeah, at least you have one. This is just a convenient cover for my emerging baldness. Thanks again, Nacho Man. T.A. Chapman says, I haven't looked at the recession indicators, but was this type of pretext before the GFC? That's pretty interesting. Bob, did we see anything like this in the metal space before 2008?
Yes. If just memory serves me, July of 2008, you had... it was kind of like one of those midnight sell-offs that happened, I think, on a Sunday night, if I remember correctly. And that actually, it was during July. So it started this sort of liquidity type of, constraint, I guess you could say, maybe, sensitivity to the markets. And that, I remember that. Of course, what was interesting with 2008, though, was, you had money piling in to SLV. I mean, a lot of money piling into SLV.
As it had just was been created, right, around this time?
I think it was like 2006, maybe. It was created. So it was an operation. Yeah. So you had a lot of money piling into SLV, but what dominated the markets back then was the futures markets. So you had much more leverage. Open interest and so forth. And so when the financial crisis started to really hit back then, it was hitting clearing firms, counterparties, everybody. And it was just basically mass liquidation. And the futures markets, obviously, when you talk about notional value, yes, money poured into SLV, but the futures markets, being that it was, its leverage on notional value, just had a much bigger footprint in the market back then. What's interesting now is, this, what we've seen at least the last month or two is open interest actually with silver really didn't go up at all. It went from about 152,000 open contracts open interest, maybe to 160 or so thousand just recently, and then it just came right back down. So you didn't really have a lot of participation happening within the futures markets. In fact, actually managed money positioning as of last week was where it was back in December of 19 or 2024. So, managed money wasn't even really participating on this.
So we had this big run up in price over the last couple of weeks, and we haven't seen any big expansion in the open interest or big changes in the position in the futures market.
No. And some of this could be attributed to the change in margin structure. A couple weeks ago, they changed to a percentage of the value of the contract versus a fixed dollar amount per se. So, you'd see a margin call or a margin hike by the CME, and they raise it from you know, certain dollar amount to a higher dollar amount. Well, now they've just gone strictly to percentages of value. So they just lifted it, I think, earlier this week, like you'd mentioned earlier, from 9%, I think, to 11% or something like that. So you know, that actually has a taxing effect on any big swing, because what happens is this margin call situation is automatic, meaning as values are dropping, if you're long, all of a sudden that 9% or, you know, move to 11% margin, 11% becomes a much more material item as prices are falling like a rock. Just like on the short side, prices are going up and you're short an 11% margin call, it's 11% at the next dollar automatically. So there is no give up at all.
It's an ongoing margin increase, right? As the price rises. Yeah.
Yeah. So in essence, what happens is it actually makes the market more volatile rather than, you know, what they were doing before. And this is the problem, is it creates these gigantic swings. I mean, we've seen this even before today. You were seeing these $8 moves. You were seeing spreads widen out amongst dealers, spreads widen out on the wholesale side. You were seeing, you know, for those that, you know, invest in PSLV, you know, that was trading at one of its largest discounts in history. As of yesterday, I think it was almost 9% discount to NAV is where it closed at. So, you know, these are totally opposite of what you're seeing in the Chinese market as well before yesterday, I guess you could say.
So the steps they're taking, the steps the COMEX then is taking, or the CME group is taking, to using their words from 2021, to tamp down the enthusiasm, it's actually amplifying the volatility. Am I understanding that correct?
Yeah, I mean, what's happening is it's when they raise margins or lower margins, it's really due more to volatility, not necessarily to price. It's just that the problem is the price has swung so high. You know, these moves on a percentage basis just are more magnified. And if you're talking about buying, you know, if you're for example, a market maker, and all of a sudden, you know, you're buying silver at 112. Literally, and the market's as volatile as it is, in the next 20 seconds, it's at 110 before you can even maybe put a hedge on. And so that has this outside effect of trying to protect not only your trade book and your inventory valuations, but just the liquidity of the firm. Because it very quickly, like we saw on the way up, you know, a lot of large dealers or wholesalers, you know, they traditionally hedge whatever physical positions that they have in inventory. They'll hedge it with maybe short futures contracts. And as the price was going up from 100 to 120, they were getting margin calls. And they were, and just like producers and mining companies, they were getting margin calls when they're trying to hedge their production in the ground. And they were having to pony up money to meet these margin calls, which is basically pulling money from their working capital account to protect, really to protect their hedge, which is protecting their, you know, their long inventory.
So maybe they can't afford to dig any silver up because all the cash they had to finance their mine is now going to margin requirements for their hedge positions. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And so so in this industry, what you've been seeing is with a lot of people selling the last couple of weeks, that selling has put so much demand on cash flow and lines of credit and so forth, that it got to pretty much an extreme point this past week where wholesalers were saying, listen, we're not buying any more silver. Or if we do buy it from you, here's your price, but we're not going to be able to pay you for 4 weeks. Or you have retail dealers that says we can't take anymore because we have no one to sell it to. Because the wholesalers had no one to sell it to, because the refiners came out earlier this week and said, you know, two major refiners, and said, listen, we're not buying any more silver or gold. I think it was one of the big ones that actually even mentioned gold. So this has an effect that almost, and I, one clarification, it just because of the the conditions and the fundamentals that are happening in the retail coin and bar market, it doesn't necessarily always mean that, okay, that means it's negative for the spot price or it's positive for the spot price. These are just conditions that are happening within the industry. And so it's important to reflect on. And this is one of the things that has been extremely frustrating for me to watch in social media is the dealers and guys running, you know, mints and refiners or promoters constantly, you know, being extremely bullish about the conditions, how everybody's running out of metal in around the world. And you know, there's no place to find it. It's unobtainium and all this other, you know, a lot of different language. Of course, the AI videos just drive me through, you know, crazy. That's a whole different, you know, ball of wax. But it's very disingenuous because a lot of people follow these individuals and they think, well, they're experts in the field. You know, they must know what they're talking about because, you know, they see what's going on a daily basis. But the problem that I have is a lot of these people are talking their book and they're not really explaining the actual conditions that are affecting the market. I mean, they're not talking about spreads. Spreads that were just blowing out. I mean, wholesalers were paying $10 yesterday for under spot for 395 silver products. And it got to a point where there just wasn't any cash left. I mean, everyone was trying to protect whatever working capital they had left. And that wasn't really discussed at all by a lot of these, you know, big dealers, unquote, that trade billions of dollars of transactions.
See, that's what just drives me nuts. And it really chaps my ass, Bob, when I see these guys. And, you know, sometimes it's the dealers themselves go out there and say, there's no silver anywhere. Hurry up, run to my website and buy bloated premiums. Sometimes they don't go themselves. Sometimes they buy, I don't know, let's say hypothetically, they might buy a pre-existing YouTube channel in Pakistan and then hire a Ukrainian guy to create an Asian AI persona and use that to convert their tweets that they're running through a secret account that they don't fully disclose is owned by a bullion dealer and then pump that out to people that makes them run in and go buy stuff. Maybe I'll have more to say about that in the future ahead. You can tell I'm somewhat lubricated right now, but and then you go to their websites and they're offering $15 back a spot for generic rounds. If you're so desperate for inventory, if there's no silver anywhere, how come you look like you're not in a hurry to buy any? That's interesting because isn't that what you sell? Yeah,
that is, to me, this is the most disingenuous thing that I've been railing on is, don't tell me there's no metal available when you're paying $10 and $15 under spot, because if there really wasn't any metal available, you'd be paying spot prices or you'd be paying a premium just to get the stuff because it's in such hot demand. This is a very big problem. And unfortunately, a lot of these social influencers you know, that are very well followed on Twitter or X. You know, they do the speaking circuits. They, you know, they get the, you know, all the accolades and so forth. You know, they sit there and they're promoting or they're supporting, you know, friends or colleagues or associates or, you know, people that they're paid to maybe support, whatever it may be. And they don't really disclose that person's business. They don't really disclose contract, the risks that are exposed when you're doing business with this individual or company, whatever it may be. This is a huge problem in social media that I don't know how it fixes. You know, I'm seeing more and more of these clauses in precious metal dealers as well as depositories, what they called waiver of jury trial clauses, where, you know, you're removing your ability to for recourse. And I'm sure if you're an attorney watching this and you're a customer, when you read that kind of stuff, you're like, well, that's a red flag, because why else would you put that type of information into a contract? Or even worse, you put the contract out, says in the contract, we can change the contract. We just have to put the change on our website under a page that you probably wouldn't look for. And then that is good delivery of notice of change of the contract or amendment to the contract. And you just slip in that waiver of jury trial clause or waiver of class action status clause or whatever it may be. I'm seeing that more and more, unfortunately, and I don't think the public realizes, and I've been talking about this, the risks that are building within this industry. I mean,
yeah,
just to give you another thing.
When they send you your free investor guide and it's in the really high gloss finish and everything, and you know that what they don't tell you in that packet is that you need to have a freaking law degree to protect yourself. They make it seem like you're protecting yourself from all this evil, bad stuff on Wall Street when you turn your nest egg over to them. Just trust me. But then you don't realize you're walking right into the same thing, just in it looks and smells a little differently. The precious metals industry is no different than Wall Street in that regard, guys. It's very important to understand there are very ethical, honest businessmen in the industry, and there are some outright dirtbags in the industry, and they all look and sound alike. It's really hard to separate them just because they think a certain way, politically, religiously, whatever, and some of them are just using that to get you to let your guard down. Don't for a second think you're on the same side of the trade as them. You are across the table from these guys. Their interests are not yours.
And with that said, I don't think the public really understands leverage when it comes to the precious metals world. A few years ago, we didn't really have an extensive loan against your gold program, a scenario. Now it's pervasive everywhere. You have leasing programs, you have, borrowing against your gold, borrowing against your silver. And a lot of dealers that run depositories run these types of programs as an ancillary form of revenue, which is fine, as long as the customer understands that risk. But on days like today, what happens is, let's just say you had an 80% loan to value, cushion on your metal, and you borrowed at $80 an ounce, and now it's at 120. You're like, hey, I'm fine. There's no worries. And all of a sudden, you have a day like today. Well, now you break through that loan to value, watermark to the downside, and now you're in potentially either you got to cough up more money or you go into forced liquidation. The problem is when these dealers are bidding $15 under spot for silver, that is a massive haircut that you're going to end up paying, because it's not just, you're not selling the silver at $80 if that's where the price is. You're selling it at $65. And that's a massive hit that people don't understand they're dealing with when they're dealing with private programs, not a bank or a financial institution that may have capital and so forth. This is just a company that's making money off of very, very wide spreads.
And just so you know, folks, one of the ways that these guys get stuff like that past you is they'll use weird denominations like ounce and a half coins or fractional ounce coins, where the math doesn't right away set off alarms in your head, because, hey, that doesn't sound right, because you'd have to multiply the spot price times 1.5. And these guys talk fast. They're already on to the next subject while you're trying to, in your head, figure out if they're robbing you or not. They'll also try to steer you into collectibles, which is where the higher premiums and the higher commissions for the salesmen are. That's all at your expense. Those are two things that you always want to watch out for. If you see one of these guys is trying to steer you into collectibles or fractional or weird denomination coinage or bars, run. That's all I would say.
Yeah, and that market, which is a lot of California dealers out there, a lot of these shady operations are, for some reason, they use Beverly Hills addresses, for credibility, whatever it may be. But a lot of them are segmented out in California for some reason, or Florida. But I'm talking about not just, the guys that sell these, half ounce, or 10th ounce sovereign mint gold products or silver products, the 1.25, 1.5, 2.5, 2 ounce type coins. I'm talking about mainstream online big dealers that have these massive wide spreads, have these loan programs, or people need to start reading these contracts and understanding these risks. I'm not talking as a competitor, saying I'm trying to put the competitor down, so to speak. I'm just saying what is actually happening, and I don't want to see the consumer have a bad experience in this market, because we're all trying to protect our purchasing power from the government. I mean, in all honesty, the government is our best salesman. It's not necessarily, the guy that's the promoter, so to speak, telling us 15 times over that there's, that the lease rate is at 30% on silver, when that actually happened back in October. And it didn't, it didn't happen, yesterday. I'm talking about, where you have very, very knowledgeable guys that have been in the business for a very long time that should know better, that should, instead of using someone that's great for hyping sales, actually do some fact checking before they put them on the program and say, okay, how actually right is this guy? If I'm going to start talking about deliveries, because I've been hearing the last 2 weeks, there are 60 million ounces being delivered of silver out of the COMEX in the month of January. These are just delivery reports that that the COMEX will use when you're trading warrants back and forth. These dealers are, paper, are
right. It's not even yes, the metal's just, not even it, moving. Yeah.
No, it's just like trading Apple stock, from one guy to the next. What's happening is that these dealers are using this type of language, and don't get me wrong, some of these reports are very confusing if you're just novice. The CME has what they call delivery reports, and they have stock reports. And the delivery reports are the trading of warrants back and forth. The stock report is what tells you how much metal is actually in the registered category or the eligible category that's moving in or out on a daily basis. And that's reported every single day. And of course, the registered category, for those that may not be aware of it, the registered category is the metal, the silver or the gold that's actually on receipt back in a futures contract, whereas the eligible category is bars that can become, that meet all the qualifications to be put on receipt, but they're just sitting in a private account. So it's good to kind of understand the differences between the two. But this is where, again, the industry does a piss poor job of building hype, trying to build momentum, selling products at massive premiums. And then when someone goes to sell back, I mean, you're seeing spreads right now upwards of $20. If you went to go buy an ounce of silver today and then sell it, it may be $15 to $20 spreads that you have to actually have in terms of the price action to move just to break even.
Yeah, I mean, you're not even going to break even. It's not for trading. That's all.
No, all right, yeah, and that's
smart. We're going to kind of do a speed round here because my viewers have piled this up in the super chats here, and there's a lot of these questions I want to get to. Eric West, thank you, Eric. He's saying, Jack, what should we expect in India if India and China stay elevated when they open next week? I think he's kind of, Eric, not to put words in your mouth, but suggesting what if the Shanghai price, for example, doesn't drop commensurate with what the COMEX did? First, is there any chance that happens, and what does it look like if it does?
Well, they'll certainly get a lot of margin calls. I mean, that's you're going to get damage in those markets. This was a huge drop. I mean, to say that this doesn't matter, and they're just going to keep. The thing is, they will the market will adjust to whatever the current prices are at. But the question is, how do they react after that market opens up? Do they start buying again after sort of the margin damage and the leverage liquidations and the forced liquidations? Because that's going to happen over there too. They're highly levered over there. As maybe we were here, or like you said, they're actually more higher.
Yeah,
more so. So that's what you want to see, is the physical market sort of come alive again and start buying. And that's what, as a long-term precious metal investor, that's what you want to see is, yes, the leverage is going to whip our markets around in price, but at the end of the day, does it hurt the long-term fundamentals and has the fundamentals really changed? And that's what you want to see what happens on Sunday night, after the shock and awe, so to speak, when they open up, once cooler heads prevail.
That's a really good point. The underlying fundamentals, macroeconomic drivers, the reasons to be long precious metals, none of that, nothing has changed in the last 48 hours. This was just a deleveraging. Too many people who had no business borrowing money to buy silver lost their shirt today. It's probably going to be worse in China because the 40x leverage in China, in their futures, some of these exchanges in that article that you posted, you know, here we have 11% margin requirements. In China, it's a 2.5%. So I mean, they're even more over their skis than we were. And that's that 36% premium to the ETF, or that the ETF is trading to net asset value. That doesn't even do it justice, because that's 36% above the Shanghai price, which is already several percent above the London and New York price. Leverage on top of leverage. China is going to be a bloodbath when the Shanghai market opens. All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Good question, sir. A couple of people, they're doing their round tripping thing again. This is my moderator, M&J, welcoming some new melon heads to the melon patch. Welcome, you guys. Hopefully we can meet under better circumstances next time. Thank you, M&J. And then Nacho Man does this all the time. Thank you for the generosity, Nacho Man. He's learned a thing or two from these AI accountants. He's round-tripping revenue. He gives a big super chat, and then he tells the moderators to go buy some new memberships with the proceeds. And there's M&J doing that, round-tripping revenue. Thank you, guys. We got 40 new members now. Appreciate it, the AI accounting. Thanks, Nacho Man. Thank you, M&J. T.A. Chapman doing a little fan service, saying smash that like button. Well, I'm Jack Campbell, and I approve this message. Thank you so much, T.A. Chapman, again. M&J say, I think this was probably when we were talking about the YouTube channel in Pakistan and the other stuff. Yeah, dirtbag rant. Yeah, you'd be amazed. M&J, I found some stuff. Still getting my thoughts organized on that one. Asked a couple of people to comment. Got crickets in return. And it's kind of funny. You know, I mentioned this, Bob, in an exchange today. About a week ago, I asked some people to comment on my investigation and asked them some questions related to these AI videos. I never heard anything back, but ever since then, I keep getting these notifications that somebody's trying to log into my Twitter account. So someone's trying to hack my shit. Hey, whatever. Good luck. Good luck, guys. Go ahead, poke that bear. I double dog dare you. Hey, thanks again, M&J. Now this is interesting. Physical ain't spot. James is saying this, and I think, not to put words in James' mouth, but my interpretation here is you go to sell that physical, you're not going to get spot. And I think he's kind of echoing what we're talking about, how, yeah, you go into the coin shops. I mean, I heard some guys are getting $5 back a spot for generic rounds, which, to be honest with you, compared to some of the numbers I've heard, it isn't awful. Certainly not when silver was $110. It wasn't awful. You're still getting $105. But at the same time, while everybody's offering backup spot, I have noticed, especially since those AI videos started coming out, I have noticed the premiums for physical metals have gone a hell of a lot higher than they were. Curious, isn't it? Thanks again, James Richter. Mr. WTF says, until the Fed gets serious about inflation and Congress gets serious about controlling spending, gold and silver will continue to rise. The tailwinds are just too great. What are two things that will never happen for 1,000, Alex? Yes. The Fed. Now, it's interesting, Whiskey, because I'm told on a pretty much monthly basis that Jerome and his colleagues remain squarely focused on achieving their dual mandate of price stability and maximum employment for the benefit of every American. Are you suggesting Jerome is not being forthcoming and truthful in that statement? Clutching the pearls I'm not wearing. Yeah, I agree, Whiskey. Thank you. Jolly Lollipop. How will war with Iran affect the metals markets? Well, we kind of talked about that one, Jolly. I think it'll affect the oils market. And, you know, Bob's, you seem pretty committed. Could you talk us again, like the transfer mechanism from oil to the gold markets? How could, say, a spike in oil prices affect what gold and silver might be doing?
Well, oil would create, you know, this uncertainty of market volatility. And if you start to see collateral start to drop in the general market, all of a sudden it becomes sell first, ask questions later. And that's, you know, the gold market or, you know, precious metals markets tend to be very liquidity sensitive. So if there's any sense of, or any inkling that, okay, we could see some, you know, maybe downside volatility, it's not uncommon to see it in the metals first. It's weird, but it's something I've seen for 30 some odd years in the business. Is they tend to be almost like a heartbeat of what's happening in before the general market hits.
So would you expect to see gold go higher if, say, we get an oil spike on conflict in the Middle East?
I would think so, because, yeah, and I've been talking about this. I was on a couple different podcasts talking about how, for example, silver. For 50 years prior to 2008's crash, 50 years, 4 gallons of gas equaled about 1 ounce of silver. Now, I mean, you got to a point earlier this week where 1 ounce of silver equaled 2 barrels of oil. Silver from that perspective was actually relatively overvalued relative to oil. So, you know, these commodities, you know, they don't really, I mean, it's just another tool from a relative valuation standpoint, but it's telling you that oil is very undervalued. Either that or silver is very overvalued. But then when you look at silver relative to gold, I think silver is still relatively, you know, it's not overvalued relative to gold by any means. Yeah, people look at the last 30 years and they say, well, the last 30 years, the average on the gold-silver ratio is like 60 or 70. Well, go back 500 years. And at 500 years, you know, prior to actually 1913, the gold-silver ratio traded between 12 and 15. Because traditionally, I think silver is about 10 ounces to compared to 1 ounce in the ground of gold. So it's, you know, that's its natural sort of ratio. So again, that's where I'm trying to go with oil is, you know, oil could be very cheap. And I, you know, from what I kind of see, a lot of money managers have been talking about how maybe they're moving more into energy and that type of thing.
You know, it's also interesting you should mention the last 40 years and the gold to silver ratio, because to a certain extent, a lot of the assumptions and patterns of the last 40 years don't apply to the next 40 years, because in my opinion, we're looking at a sustained period, probably multi-decade long period of consistently higher interest rates. And I think it started in 2022. And whereas from 1980 to 2020-ish, we saw consistently lower interest rates with gold outperforming in a low rate environment. Gold more sensitive to interest rates because it competes with bonds, whereas silver has a little bit of an industrial element to it, so it doesn't respond in a purely monetary fashion like gold does. Now, if we're heading towards a 40-year period of higher interest rates, you would expect silver to outperform gold in that environment because gold competes with bonds. Higher interest rates makes it more competitive. It's not a one-for-one apples-to-apples comparison, but it is to say that a lot of the traditional assumptions that bound our thinking and almost everybody alive today, the entirety of their experience has been within that 40-year period of consistently lower interest rates, and that may not apply. We may need to unlearn a lot of these things that have been built into our brains over the last few years. So it may make more sense to look at the gold to silver ratio from, say, post-World War II through 1980 versus 1980 through COVID, something like that. Interesting, Bob. Thank you. All right, we also got Duke Dookie, the double D, says, okay, we're talking about the spoofing here. JP Morgan, legal custodian for the COMEX, admitted guilt and paid $920 million fine at the time. I believe it was one of the biggest fines ever until TD Bank took that mantle from them last year. $920 million fine for manipulation and price suppression for hundreds of thousands of instances of spoofing in silver and gold from 2008 to 2016. Just saying, manipulation does happen. All factually correct, 100% accurate. And yes, even though they were fined almost $1 billion for manipulating the price of precious metals, they are still the custodian for the SLV ETF. And COMEX, are they also a COMEX custodian too? I don't know that for a fact, but I know they're the SLV custodian. They are? Okay.
Yeah. And don't forget that fine was also, I think they were also involved in several other markets. It wasn't just precious metals. It was, I think, a treasury, interest rates, that type of thing. So it wasn't just plainly precious metals.
Okay.
But you're right. I mean, there's been obviously a lot of instances of banks in there managing, manipulating, you know, for profit, so to speak, or, you know, for government policy, who knows? They're definitely, it's been there through the years.
All I can say is whoever's job it was at JP Morgan to suppress the price of silver in 2025 and the first few weeks of 2026 has done a shit job of it. I can tell you that. Feral Grandma, terrifying name, gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, Feral Grandma. I appreciate that very much. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you 10 lucky melon heads. You be sure and say thank you to M&J and Nacho Man and Feral Grandma, all you new members. Hey, Hunt and Covers back again, says Bubba shot the jukebox to get some silver out. All right. Well, you know, it's coin roll hunting. That's an unorthodox approach, but I'm told there's still some of those silver quarters out there in circulation. That's that's one way to get some. Thank you, Hunt and Cover. And Frank300ZX says 99 more likes to hit 450 for 20 free membership gifting. Thanks, Jack and Bob, for the afternoon live. All right, so Frank, he's laying down the gauntlet. How many more of these here likes do we need? Another 99. All right, and that was a few minutes ago. So, all right, this is another cue up for the hitting of the like button, the smashing of the like button, all that good stuff. All right. Thank you very much, Frank300ZX. And if we hit that number, I'll see it scroll up on my screen here. Bob, I have to ask you, now that we've ranted about the industry and its certain misdeeds by certain individuals, not the whole industry, they're not all bad. And we've talked about what happened today, the mechanics of the market. I'm seeing a lot of stuff scroll by in the comments. Is this the top? Is it going to crash now? Are we going to bounce? Are we still going higher? I mean, I know this is a pretty tall order and there's a lot of variables and like we're right in the middle of this historic market event. It's really hard to tell what's happening when you're in the midst of it, but maybe just give me your gut. You know, what's happening here? Is the top in or is this just a shakeout and we're going to start grinding higher again after consolidation?
Well, you have to look at it from a standpoint on a monthly basis. We were on a monthly candle five periods, I guess, above the upper Bollinger Band line. So you wanted to see some type of pullback that would alleviate this massive overbought condition or stretched condition, I guess you could say. Because when markets get into bull markets, they can turn into an overbought and stay overbought for a lot longer than people think. Ultimately, you just have to look at the fundamentals. The fundamentals are just telling us unless the government has some magic sort of weapon in terms of, you know, building the economy back up and bringing in more tax revenue. And, you know, the problem is the housing market's flat or stagnant. Trump is trying to get housing prices up, which, you know, most people think, well, how's that going to help the guy who wants to buy a house?
Why? Yeah. Why? What do you want?
Yeah, we're really stuck because at the end of the day, we live in a world of inflation that's almost needed. You have all this debt servicing that's going on. You have a lot of debts that are coming due from the COVID era, a lot of 5 and 7 year type maturities of business loans and so forth. Those are going to roll. So, you know, that has to be somehow serviced as well. So there's a concerted effort to try and get interest rates down, but it's almost as if they're forcing it down. It's not necessarily that the economy is saying, we should be having lower interest rates, because in reality, we're spending so much money. The deficits are still piling up, and there's still a lot of debt to actually bring to market. And that's, of course, why they started, the Fed started, they came out in December saying we're going to buy $40 billion of treasuries on a monthly basis. They're not doing that because, you know, everyone's flush with dollars. They're doing it because the market needs that liquidity for the whole system to work. And I think as this game kind of progresses, the liquidity is just going to be needed at a greater and greater level to maintain, you know, this sort of at the margin life that we all come to expect.
And, you know, just to add to that point you made about the Fed and their $40 billion purchase of T-bills, that's, you know, new money that they're going to create digitally and pump into the treasury market. They're also letting mortgage-backed securities roll off their balance sheet. And as that happens, they basically mature, they get paid back. They're taking that money and they're putting that into the treasury bill market. But in an equal and opposite action, now we've got Fannie and Freddie are going to go buy $200 billion of mortgage-backed securities. Where's that money going to come from? It's going to be borrowed from the T-bill market. So Fed takes money from MBS, puts it into T-bills. Treasury takes money from T-bills and puts it right back into MBS. What the hell are they doing? They're also printing $40 billion a month, putting that into T-bills, all while telling us they remain squarely focused on achieving their dual mandate of price stability, maximum employment. You're right, Bob. I mean, these price swings and the leverage is going to build up and flush out and build up and flush out like we just witnessed. But I think the narrative, the underlying story remains intact. Gold and silver, it's going to do what it's going to do in the short term. In the long term, it still goes higher. I really think that. Bob, thank you again for taking all your time. We're coming up on the 6-0 mark here, so I think we're going to wrap it up. I'm also going to say thank you to Frank 300ZX. I guess Frank got his number. We hit our 450. Thank you so much, Frank. And there's M&J right behind him with 20 Nobody Special memberships. Thank you, guys. Welcome to the Melon Patch, everybody. Bob, thanks again. Everybody, you should 100% be following Bob on Twitter, at Profits Plus ID on X. He is the go-to place for information on the precious metals market. And whenever something happens in the market, I get Bob on the horn and I try to bring him on the channel. So, Bob, thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge and your wisdom with us. Also, check out Bob's website, links down below, all that other good stuff. Thank you guys so much for the super chats and for supporting the channel. Really appreciate that. Thank you. Special shout out to my Patreon members on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. All those links are also down below. I guess we should start our weekend, eh, Bob? Have you had enough of Friday yet?
Oh, I don't even remember the morning. That was a light year ago.
Yeah, it's been one of those days that takes years. It really has. Well, thank you again, Bob. I really appreciate the effort. I appreciate all you guys watching at home as well. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. We'll be back on Monday. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.